This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the Trump administration has set its sights on the elimination of ISIS from day one. However, security experts are saying the Islamic terrorist organization will continue to pose a threat to the West, including the U.S., for some time. Frank Gaffney, president of the Center for Security Policy, has more. And it looks like the NBA's razzle-dazzle over transgender locker rooms and bathrooms hasn't excited basketball fans going into the weekend's All-Star game. Tickets were, well, not selling too well. Has professional sports become too political? North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest joins me for that conversation. Also, with the Boy Scouts of America taking a wrong trail, Trail Life USA, a Christian scouting program for boys, is gaining lots of new members. We'll talk about that as well here today on Washington Watch. And apparently, the New York Times thought Todd Starnes' best-selling new book was too deplorable to include on its bestseller list. Todd Starnes is here with the details on that story. A lot of ground to cover today, folks. Hope you're ready to go. By the way, if you happen to miss anything on the way home today, you can always go back to TonyPerkins.com. We archive all of our conversations, interviews right there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right. Well, the new administration brings an enhanced strategy to contain, if not eliminate, ISIS. In fact, you might recall the president in his swearing-in ceremony when he gave his first speech to the American people as president of the United States. He made very clear that we were going after ISIS and Islamic terrorists. Well, they still, according to U.S. officials, present a major security risk to the United States and to the West in general. Joining me now to talk more about this is Frank Gaffney, who is the president of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's great to be with you.
All right. We know that this administration is taking a much different approach to Islamic terrorists. I mean, they're not playing around. They're very serious. But so much had been neglected that there is going to be a threat, according to experts, from ISIS for some time.
Tony, if it were just a question of so much being neglected, that would be one thing. But as you know, what the Obama administration did during its 8 years in office is actually greatly exacerbate, intensify, worsen the threat we face from what I think is best described as Sharia supremacism and its adherents who are seeking to impose that Islamic doctrine, totalitarian doctrine, on all of us. Islamic State is one of the brands under which these people do business. They do it in a particularly ruthless way, but they're just one of the Sharia supremacist operations around the world. And what's particularly worrying to me, as we've talked about in the past, Tony, is that in addition to these virulent jihadists who we see in places like Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan and Nigeria and so many other parts of the world, and increasingly, unfortunately, including Europe, is that they operate in this country as well, and they operate in both the kind of, we've been encouraged to believe it's lone wolves, but in fact, what that simply translates into is individual jihadists carrying out their violent kind of jihad. But on top of that, you have the infrastructure that has been put into place that enables those folks to be such serious threats. Mosques and community centers and Islamic societies and not least influence operations in various front groups of the Muslim Brotherhood. So you take all that together, President Trump has his work cut out for him. But in no small measure, thanks to the damage done by President Obama in the previous 8 years.
So your point is it not just was it an issue of neglect, but they facilitated really the growth of this threat.
Exactly. Enabled it.
How then will this administration be able to deal with the internal threat. Now, we know that they're increasing military activity and special operations and such to eliminate some of the top kingpins in the Islamic world that are driving this, the Islamic terrorist world. What can be done domestically here? As you mentioned, the term that's often used is lone wolves, but these people are radicalized, either having come here recently or having been here for a while, but they are connected in some form or fashion.
Well, they're at least connected in terms of their embrace of a shared ideology. That would be Sharia. A colleague of mine, Patrick Poole, has coined the term known wolves for many of these guys, because in case after case after case, it seems the FBI or local law enforcement actually had some indication that these folks were problematic. But what I'm getting at, Tony, is, first of all, the president is trying to do the right thing, and the courts, of course, are, I believe, in an unconstitutional way, interfering with his efforts, but he's trying to prevent more jihadists from being imported.
Right.
That would be the first step, wouldn't it?
Now, is that that aspect of, when we're talking about immigration, I mean, that's simply learning the lessons of what happened in Europe with ISIS and these terrorists. I mean, that's just basically looking and see how they got there.
Sense.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly right. And especially, Tony, as you know, one of the things that is part and parcel of this Islamic supremacist doctrine of Sharia is a notion called the Hijra, which is a technique for expanding their dominion into non-Muslim parts of the world by migration. And so, when we let them in without differentiating between those who are trying to take down our country on the one hand and those who may wish to help build it up on the other, we're making a terrible mistake. So that's point one. Point two, I think the president has to do, and by the way, he laid out all of this in a terrific speech he made back on August 15th of last year. I really commend it to your audience. Maybe you could link to it if you would. But it's a very important, comprehensive, really, I call it a plan for victory over jihad. And one of the things that he says very explicitly there is we need a counter-ideological program that basically brings all elements of a national power against this enemy, much as my old boss Ronald Reagan did the Soviet Union, the last totalitarian ideology that tried to take us down. And one of the other things that Donald Trump talked about was we need to expose the networks that contribute to radicalization of the Muslim community in our society. And by that, he's talking about those Muslim Brotherhood operations, the infrastructure that they've built that is a critical element of the future violent jihadist capability.
Now, speaking, Frank Gaffney, of the Muslim Brotherhood, I mean, clearly they're linked to all these bad actors repeatedly. We see this in the documents that are uncovered. Do you foresee the Muslim Brotherhood in this country being identified as a terrorist organization?
It's absolutely critical, Tony, and I think the president has been very clear. He knows that needs to be done. I think he is planning to do it. One of the very interesting questions that has just arisen with his decision over the weekend to bring Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster's in as his national security advisor is, will he be supportive of that step? There's a piece out on Bloomberg by Eli Lake this afternoon talking about his longstanding record of essentially trying to make sure nobody gives offense to Muslims. That was very redolent of the approach of the previous administration. I think it's contributed to the problem we're in today. I hope he'll be very supportive of this president in a very different approach, including one that designates the Muslim Brotherhood as what it is, a terrorist organization.
What would that mean, practically speaking, within this country and when we talk about security here within our own borders, threats from Islamic terrorists, if the Muslim Brotherhood is in fact identified as a terrorist organization? What's the practical effect of that?
Tony, it gives the government of the United States an opportunity to do what it hasn't found a way to do so far. That is, instead of embracing the Brotherhood, instead of empowering them, instead of using them as our outreach partners and otherwise allowing them to be the arbiters of what we can know and say and do about this Islamic or Sharia supremacist program, we could actually begin countering those who are promoting it. Those mosques, and not all mosques, by the way, and not all Muslims are a problem here, but some are. And being able to counter them and to stop the perception within the Muslim community that the Muslim Brothers are their leaders, something we've been encouraging them to believe, is a first critical step to inducing a lot of Muslims to align with us instead of align with people who are very much determined to take down our country. It's going to take time. These guys have been operating here, as you know, I think, Tony, for 50 years.
Right.
Most of us are unaware of that. So it's going to take some time to undo it, but you've got to get started, and this is our chance to do it under President Donald Trump.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. Frank Gaffney, my guest, talking about comments made that the ISIS continues to pose a threat here within our own borders because of the neglect or the environment that fostered their growth in the previous administration. Frank, I want to, we just got a couple minutes left, but I want to zero in on something you said. There are mosques, Muslim mosques, that are not seeking to overthrow this country. There are those that are peace-loving people, I believe, in this country. I've met some of them. But how do you, as the government, how do they go in and differentiate? And how is that going, practically speaking? How could the Trump administration make that happen?
Well, the key to it is the point that I've made several times, Tony, and that is understanding that what we're dealing with is not a religious practice.
Mm-hmm.
In this program they call Sharia, it is a political, military, legal doctrine that
and
has
what percentage,
very explicitly.
What percentage of Muslims in this country subscribe to that, to the Sharia
law?
It's a
law? Very good question. And to some extent, people will tell you, well, I know that the Sharia is the path that I need to follow it. But they're not talking about the authoritative version of Sharia, which is brutally repressive. It's horrible to women and homosexuals and Jews and apostates and so on. Those are the folks that you need to differentiate from the law-abiding, peaceful, tolerant Muslims. And to answer your question, I think that we need to have the government using techniques that are empirical and that are fairly straightforward to identify which is which, whether they're coming into this country or trying to, or whether they're in this country. And one of the studies that was done by one of my colleagues, David Yerushalmi, years ago, 100 mosques around the United States, randomly sampled, 80 of them, 80 of the 100 were Sharia adherent. And where you found evidence of that Sharia adherence, Tony, you found evidence of support for jihad. So I think that's not representative of the population of Muslims, but I think it is representative of the mosques, because the Saudis have been funding
right.
the construction and mortgages of mosques in this country, and hence a lot of them are radical.
Yes, and we have states, jurisdictions that are facilitating Sharia law, which shouldn't be happening. That's a major
Amen.
Problem. Frank Gaffney, Amen. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, Frank Gaffney, Center for Security Policy. I mean, look, it does not work. You cannot have Sharia law and the Constitution of the United States, and we cannot facilitate that in any form or fashion. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're talking about the NBA. Have they become too political? Didn't look like their tickets were going too good leading into this weekend's All-Star game. We're going to talk about that with the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
The first cries of a newborn baby signal the miracle of life. There are some who believe that life actually begins at that point, that whatever is in the womb is just tissue and could possibly even be an accident. But the Bible shows something quite different. In Psalm 139 it says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Life begins in the womb at the point of conception, and the Bible makes it clear that it's not just tissue, and there are no accidents with God. Life is a precious gift that's meant to be treasured, not destroyed. In fact, life is so valued by God that He sent His Son Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin so we could have life with Him for eternity. If life is that important to God, shouldn't we do all we can to protect it? For your help in defending the sanctity of human life, thank you from AFR.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Worldview is always present in entertainment, and it affects us even when we don't understand it. Many who watched Beyoncé at the Grammys had no idea that she was promoting ancient goddesses and ancient pagan fertility rituals. Solomon said, "There's nothing new under the sun." Hollywood and its minions will continue to worship false gods and paganism before ever impressionable minds, but that doesn't mean we must view what they are showing. Only God is worthy of our worship. So guard your eyes, guard your mind, guard your heart. What we watch opens the doors of acceptability and changes us one image at a time. Whether young or old, we are impacted by what we allow to quote-unquote entertain us. May God give us spiritual backbones. I will place no wicked thing before my eyes. That's what the Bible says, Psalm 101:3a. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. This past August, the National Basketball Association opted to move its All-Star game out of Charlotte, North Carolina, in protest over the state's efforts to protect women and children in public facilities. Now, a report going into this past weekend's All-Star game that was moved to New Orleans. A report showed that the ticket sales had plummeted, or the price of ticket sales had plummeted roughly about 71%. We've seen a decline in the NFL as they've become more political. Is professional sports becoming too political? Even so much so that the fans are turning away. Joining us now to discuss this is the North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. Hope you're having a good day.
Having a great day, by the way. Having a great day. You know, the NBA, you know, pulled the game out of Charlotte, moved it to my home state of Louisiana, down New Orleans, which, by the way, has the same policy that North Carolina has. And didn't look like the fans responded too well in terms of ticket sales. Looked like they may have lost money. I'm not sure. I hadn't gotten the final reports. But are we seeing this, you know, the professional sports becoming weighing into all these political things, and are the fans pushing back?
I think there's no doubt about that. We saw that in the NFL. We saw it with the Kaepernick issue and not standing for the singing of the national anthem and those types of things. And I think, you know, this is sports is entertainment. This is the entertainment industry. People go to sporting events to watch the game. Just the same way they go to a movie to be entertained. They don't want to have to go and be part of some political statement when they're at a ball game. They want to go and relax and have a good time with their friends. And so we've seen the NFL ratings drop off significantly. I think you're going to continue to see this as the professional sports leagues and even the college sports leagues become more politically active. You know, we saw the same thing happen. ACC, you know, pulled out of North Carolina their championship football game, went to Florida, ticket sales dropped. That had nothing to do with the political statement, but, you know, they pulled out because of a political statement, right, and they paid the price. I don't know if the NBA's issue here in New Orleans has anything to do with the political statement, but regardless, the NBA is paying the price for moving the game. And hopefully they're paying a little bit of the price for their hypocrisy. As you said, they moved to a state that has the same laws, North Carolina, as do most states, as does the federal government. And North Carolina has the same law now that they had when the NBA signed the deal for the All-Star game years ago. So it's hypocrisy, and they're paying the price for it.
Well, it part of the reason, I mean, look, I'll just be candid, even though I'm obviously biased toward my home state of Louisiana, but there's a reason that a lot of these games have been moved to North Carolina. In fact, the football tournament had been previously, I believe, played in Florida. But there's the destination-driven crowd to go to North Carolina. The weather's a little more mild. Nice place to visit. And so I think it's conducive for these sporting events. And if they're going to make a political statement, as you said, they may not be paying the price directly as a result of it, but it is affecting their bottom line.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'd always hesitate to draw any direct correlations here when it comes to sporting events, but you know, I think in New Orleans, you're obviously seeing probably some buyer's fatigue down there since they've hosted the game so many times. And there's probably some folks that are just saying, oh, I've had enough of that. But again, you know, I think that these folks, I hope that, you know, they have radical leftist agendas that they're trying to push through. And these entertainment events is really, it's not the place to do it, because you have to think of who their average fan is. And their average fan is not engaged in politics at this level, doesn't want to be, and doesn't want to go there and see this political statement being made.
Now, we spoke last week on a webcast we did on this topic of HB2 that the state of North Carolina did to protect women and children in public facilities, the state of Texas now pursuing a very similar policy. And we didn't talk about it on this program last week, but we talked about it on the webcast, that the claims that this stand that the state of North Carolina has taken for public safety has had an economic devastating impact upon the state. The evidence just does not bear that out.
No, in fact, it's just the opposite. North Carolina is doing extremely well fiscally. The economy is growing. It continues to grow. Businesses continue to move here. And as I've said on your show and many others every day, the economic impact of HB2 is about 0.5% of the annual GDP at most. It's much more likely to be about 0.25%. So it's really insignificant. It's a rounding error at best. Not one you want, but as I always have to remind every audience as well, that we didn't bring this upon ourselves. Nobody was out there looking to bring bathroom policy to North Carolina. You know, we had a very classical liberal approach to doing that type of policy. Is kind of a live and let live approach that we people lived by for a long time in America until the progressive movement brought this to North Carolina and tried to create a solution for a problem that didn't exist.
But you are consistently rated by Forbes and others as one of the top states for attracting business. And part of making those decisions of where to go for business leaders is basically the climate, the type. And I'm not talking about the in terms of weather. I'm talking about is it a good place for a family? And that's what policies like this help define.
That's right. And I think that long term, too, Tony, I mean, this is something that doesn't get talked about very often, but long term, I think you're going to see growth continue in North Carolina because of policies like this, because of people can move here and know they're going to be safe. They're going to be protected, to know that their privacy, basic privacy, is going to be protected, that we do live by basic family values here that are important to the average family and even important to the average CEO. So we continue to do all the things that we need to do from a government perspective, like safety and security and those types of things, but also driving down the tax rate. And we've reduced taxes faster than any other state in the nation over the last few years. We continue to invest heavily in education. We're doing all the things that create a sound, basic level playing field for businesses to come here, feel safe, to be able to grow their business without the government being in the pocket.
And it's paying off. It's paying off. Governor, thanks so much for joining us. As always, Dan, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. I hope you have a great day. Take care now.
All right, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina. Find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, Trail Life USA, taking off. Going to talk about it. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Not a lot of economic data expected coming out of the U.S. today or the rest of the week for that matter, but we are going to continue to watch. It looks like there is momentum in all the indices across the board. Commodities are suffering a little bit with the exception of oil. Most commodities are dipping down. All the metals, industrial metals, including copper, down significantly over the last four or five trading days, primarily due to a dollar that is strengthening, dollar up close to a half of 1% over the last couple of weeks. And that, of course, is impacting commodities. The European markets look pretty good. French inflation finally up 1.3% on the year. So that's good news for the French economy. All the Asia markets in positive territory, looking far more optimistic than they've been. The economic shift in the Eurozone still is holding up into positive territory. As a matter of fact, 5,000 companies surveyed, it says that the manufacturing and services index rose to 56, 50 being flatline, below 50 being negative. So a pretty significant rise compared to the last look of 54. So that's good news across the Eurozone in general. The big picture is the inflation issue across the global front as we see inflation picking up. Remember, we have seen central banks around the globe throwing everything at inflation. Negative interest rates, more quantitative easing, on and on it goes. Finally, we're seeing some inflation come into those economies. The upside is they won't be exporting to us deflation. That's what's been going on for quite some time. So that's good news for our economy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
To Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. Website TonyPerkins.com. All right. In recent years, the Boy Scouts of America has captured headlines. You might recall this. We've talked about it extensively on this program. In 2014, the organization began accepting openly gay scouts for the first time, and then a year later, the Boy Scouts made headlines again when the national organization ended its ban on openly homosexual adult leaders. Yeah. Then, of course, you know, once you go down that path, there's just no turning back. In January, the Boy Scouts of America said it would begin accepting members based upon their gender identity, opening the door for transgender scouts. And there's no end to it. Well, we were a part of something back when we knew the Scouts made this decision. It was, it was going to be the end of that century-old organization that had been training boys to become men. An organization called Trail Life USA began, and it started gaining ground. Well, with this latest move by the Boy Scouts, Trail Life USA is, I'm not even sure they can keep up with all the boys that want to become a part of this Christian organization. Joining me now to talk about it is the Chief Executive Officer of Trail Life USA, Mark Hancock. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you having me on.
Things are going quite well there at Trail Life. In fact, I think you guys are having a hard time keeping up with all the boys wanting to come in.
Well, I guess that's good news. That's the kind of difficulty you like to have. But lately, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen interest in Trail Life USA, and both in troops wanting to join and then also individual members looking out, trying to find a place to be a part.
Now, most troops are chartered by churches. You have, if I believe, about 700 troops in 48 different states. This has taken off quite, for a young organization, I mean, we're just talking a few years old, this has taken off quite well.
Yeah, we started January 1st, 2014. In your introduction, you talked about the change that Boy Scouts made. We started the day that they initiated that new change, and we started with 500 troops in line. and we've grown to nearly 700 now in 48 states, almost right around 26,000 members in just that 3 years.
Tell our listeners a little bit about Trail Life USA, kind of the focus, what boys participate in, and the goal of Trail Life USA.
Yeah, well, the mission of Trail Life USA is to guide generations of courageous young men to honor God, to lead with integrity, to serve others, and to experience outdoor adventure. We really believe that the outdoors is a great place for boys to be mentored by good Christian men. We're a Christ-centered organization, unapologetically Christian, and all of our adult members sign a statement of faith, a Trinitarian statement of faith, and they also sign a statement of values that talks about things like purity and integrity and stewardship and service, including in their definition of marriage, a one man, one woman marriage statement. And so those are our leaders. Now, the membership to the boys is open to all boys, so any faith or no faith at all, because we think that there's an opportunity there to minister to these boys in a Christ-centered environment. We have a very robust awards program. We start in kindergarten and go through 18 years, our main program. And we have boys learning to do all the outdoor skills and camping and hiking. We're very robust in terms of our adventure. We think that boys really want adventure. And where some other outdoor organizations were losing boys and saying that boys just didn't want to go outdoors anymore, we're finding that there's a real hunger for that, and we're growing because of our commitment to outdoor adventure and our Christ-centered principles.
So, Mark, how can folks find out more about Trail Life USA and how they might participate, how a church might host a troop? How does that work?
Well, there's all kinds of information on our website at traillifeusa.com. There's a tab at the top that says Find a Troop and Start a Troop. Our Find a Troop tab, you'll see, show you where all the troops are located across the United States, and they can enter in their own information to find the troop closest to them. And they can email them directly and get some information on attending that troop. And then there's also information on how to start a troop. It just takes five adults to start a troop. And we do have a vetting process. We talk with everybody who's charting a troop. We really believe that the relationship with the local church is a critical part of who it is that Trail Life is. We don't think of our group as just meeting in the basement of a church or meeting at a church, but actually being an outreach of that church, to where ministries who are really recognizing the power of having a Trail Life USA troop associated with their church are seeing growth, because they're seeing young men come in who are interested in outdoor activities, and they're bringing their friends, and then they're also bringing their families, things like that. So the churches that understand that idea, that embrace that it can be an outreach of their church, are really seeing growth in their church. We have a robust awards program. Our highest award is the Freedom Rangeman. If you're familiar with the Eagle Scout Award, it's which is highest of the Boy Scouts, ours is the Freedom Award. A little bit more difficult to get than the Eagle. We do allow boys to transfer over from Boy Scouts into Trail Life, and they get credit for the things that they achieved in Boy Scouts. But the Freedom Award takes probably another year or year and a half after you earn your Eagle in order to get the Freedom Award, because we have some faith elements that aren't part of the Eagle. But it's a robust program, an outdoor program, a mentorship program, and we're just seeing a lot of success across the country.
Well, we applaud you for the work you're doing. It is a great program. And we will continue to promote that to young men across this country. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony. God bless.
All right, folks, to find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com or just go to TrailLifeUSA.com. It's a great opportunity, as Mark was talking about, for churches to host a troop. All right, when we come back, Todd Starnes, his book Deplorable, apparently too deplorable for the New York Times. He's going to talk to us about it. Don't go away.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
News travels fast and it's constantly changing. Keep up on onenewsnow.com. It's a news site featuring the latest breaking stories from across the U.S. and around the world. OneNewsNow.com has well-researched articles from a conservative evangelical perspective with hot topics of concern to Christians right now. Get the full story when you visit OneNewsNow.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, God has allowed us to go all over the country to serve as 8 Days of Hope. We've been to Illinois, New York, Texas, North Carolina, pretty much from coast to coast. And it's so awesome to meet homeowners. They're just so encouraged. I mean, sometimes we rebuild their homes. Other times we put a tarp on the roof or do chainsaw work. We have never charged anybody anything for our services. Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others just as He loves us. If you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, either with our rapid response team that goes anywhere in the country within 3 to 4 days of a disaster, or in our rebuilding efforts like we did last year in South Carolina, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click Get Involved or Volunteer, and we will notify you anytime God calls us to go and serve those who suffer from disaster. 8daysofhope.com or on Facebook.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. The website, you can find out lots of stuff there at the website. I've got that link over to Trail Life. And I would strongly encourage you to think about that. FRC was a part of actually chartering that organization back when we saw the Boy Scouts, going down the wrong path. And so it is a solid. It was a number of leaders from different organizations that had been involved in scouting and wanted to launch a Christ-based organization. And all the people involved in it, solid folks. And it's a great opportunity for churches to reach out in their community. So anyway, go to TonyPerkins.com and you can follow the links over. By the way, folks, just want to remind you once again, don't do this very often, but this program is made available because of folks like you across this country that are supporting the Family Research Council. If you'd like to partner with us, go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, some information out there. You might be interested in this. We're going to Alaska in August, and there's end of July, 1st of August, information about that. If you'd like to take a cruise with us to Alaska, the Free to Believe cruise, you can find out more at TonyPerkins.com. We're going to have a great time. All right. Apparently, the New York Times thought that Todd Starnes's best-selling new book, was too deplorable to include on its bestseller list. The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again was omitted from the New York Times bestsellers list in spite of selling enough books to qualify as number two. What's up with that? Joining me now is Todd Starnes himself. Todd, what's going on?
Tony Perkins, I know the New York Times is filled with fake news, but I had no idea they were also engaged in creating fake lists. I mean, this is really crazy, but it's not all that surprising, actually.
Wait a minute, we're losing him. Let's see if we can get him back there. He's fading on us. Maybe the New York Times is zeroing in on him. This is something, folks. I mean, in this, there's the way these things are done. book selling is a big business. And so, you know, Todd's been out there on the road. He's been on the program here a couple of times talking about the book. And then he's been on a book tour across the country promoting the book and on radio programs, TV programs, selling, generating interest, and people buy the books. And it's a big deal to be on the New York Times best-selling list. And when you have a book that reaches that high, and his book has been selling all of the list are showing him as a top-selling book. And then for the New York Times just to arbitrarily say, oh, it didn't make our list, something very suspicious about that. And, you know, I think it does show the bias that we continue to see from the New York Times and other very liberal publications. Do we have him back? Do we have a solid connection? Okay, all right, we're reconnecting. All right, we got him back. There you are, Todd. You with us?
I am, yes.
Okay, all right, we lost you there. You're fading out. I think the New York Times was zeroing in on you. So we're just talking about this, how, you know, look, you've been traveling the country, great response to the book, very catchy title. The book is doing quite well, according to all of the indicators and the other lists out there. How is it that the New York Times can simply step over that information?
Well, you know, Tony, they told our publisher that there was some sort of subjective formulas that they use to create their own list. So in my particular case, even though my book sold more copies than 9 out of the 10 books on the list, it wasn't good enough because it did not meet their secret criteria. But again, this is really nothing new with the New York Times, which has been accused of, you know, fomenting and publishing fake news. Conservatives in the past have seen their books not make the list, even though they've done very well in the marketplace.
Now, I mean, I know it's a private entity, but when they hold themselves out kind of as a public service of ranking these books as the bestsellers, and these are the ones that people are looking at. I mean, it clearly has an impact on book sales when you have a book that is listed on the New York Times bestselling list. Do you think more information is forthcoming from them, or from their perspective, is this issue over?
I doubt it seriously. I think for the New York Times, the issue is over. You know, they set the rules. It is their list, so they can determine what those rules are. But quite frankly, it's disingenuous because it really isn't a bestseller list. It's what the New York Times thinks people ought to be reading. And Tony, quite frankly, at the end of the day, I really do not curry the favor of the editors of the New York Times. I'm much more interested in the opinions of the gun-toting, Bible-clinging deplorables who read my books and columns.
The fried chicken eating.
And sweet tea drinking.
That's right. All right. Well, tell me, what have you been hearing from the readers that have...
It's really been really positive. Folks are having a good time reading the book because it really is a handbook, Tony, of giving practical ideas on how people can make their communities, their public schools great again. And that's really what we wanted to do, because we need to understand we cannot rely on Washington, D.C., to restore traditional values to this country. That's something that all of us have to do in our own communities and in our own homes. And that's why I really hope that, you know, every person listening grabs a copy of this book. Make sure you put one in the church library, because this is, again, an information source for people who want to engage the culture and be good citizens of America.
Well, in many ways, what the New York Times has done here proves the point of what you're doing and why this book is necessary to challenge the political elite and not simply say, well, we won the election and so the problem is solved, because it absolutely has not been solved, as we've, you know, see here evidenced by the New York Times. As you said, it's really not a bestsellers list. It's more of the New York Times book club list of books they recommend. I do believe, and we saw this, I had George Barna on last week, had done a recent survey that showed that 3/4 of social conservatives, sage cons as he calls them, they are ready to do something to make a difference. They're not disengaged. They're not ready to go back home and go to sleep. They are ready to engage and change the culture. And that's exactly what your book provides, is the how-to.
That's right, because a lot of Christians think we have to stand on the sidelines, and I don't believe that's the case. I illustrate that by going back to the early days, the founding of our country, where pastors were on the front lines of the battle to create this nation and to secure our freedom. So we're going to have to step up to the plate. That was the message I delivered to 14,000 students at Liberty University on Friday, is that we are freedom's last line of defense. And so we've got to stand up, and we've got to stand up together, and we're going to have to be, Tony, as the FRC knows all too well, those watchmen on the wall.
Well, and talking about tools and implements that can be used to take the country back, you talk about one of those that FRC makes available, and that is the culture impact teams that churches can employ all across this country to make a difference right there in their own community.
Well, that's right, Tony, and those are so important. I know many churches across the country that are implementing these teams, and it is such a valuable resource that Family Research Council offers. Because, again, what better way to inform your neighbors and your fellow church members than by having a team that is committed, that is dedicated to doing that, and bringing those issues to the attention of the senior pastors. So, again, it is so imperative. You know, Franklin Graham told me that we were at a moral tipping point, and we still have a lot of work to do, as we learned from the Washington Supreme Court ruling just a few days ago involving right. Darren L. Stutzman. The fight for religious liberty goes on here in America.
Well, every American needs a copy of the Bible, a copy of Todd Starnes' books, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, and a handbook to the Culture Impact Team, and America will, in fact, be great again with those three books in tow. No doubt?
Well, Tony, in my defense and in the New York Times defense, it really is a deplorable book.
Todd Starnes, as always, great to talk with you.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, Todd Starnes. To find out more and to get your copy of the book, go to TonyPerkins.com. But in all seriousness, you know, Todd is able to deliver this message with humor, and of course, all of his books are that way. But the Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, does just that. But it does, in many ways, highlights the importance of you making the difference. And it talks about some of those tools, and he does talk about the culture impact teams that we can help you set up. And we talked about this a little bit last week, and several of you responded, and we have information on its way to you. If you would like to set up a culture impact team in your church, pastor, if you'd like to do that, a lay person, now we laymen, we do want them all checked out by the pastor. The pastor's got to sign off on these, because we think he has we know and recognize the spiritual authority that the pastor has in a church. But you can take the information to your pastor. It's not something else that is put on his plate that requires him to do something else. It is equipping the saints for the work of the ministry, and it allows your church to have an impact in your community, whether it's the school board, city council, state legislature, and, of course, the resources that we provide here at the Family Research Council for things taking place on the national level. So if you'd like to find out more about setting up a culture impact team in your church, just go to TonyPerkins.com, send me a message, or you can simply email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. That's Tony@TonyPerkins.com. Word coming out that we're waiting to see whether or not the Trump administration is going to rescind the orders that were issued from the Department of Education and the Department of Justice regarding the bathroom policies, which, you know, we've talked about is actually what prompted what took place in North Carolina. Charlotte, as we've talked about, Charlotte, the city council there putting into this policy in place that required the private entities, including businesses and other private entities to adopt his confused bathroom policy. The state responded with HB2, which simply said you cannot mandate it. Private entities can do what they want, but you can't mandate it. When they did that, that's when the Obama administration, through the Department of Justice and Education, issued these guidance letters saying, if you don't do this, you're going to jeopardize your funding that comes in education to your institutions. So that's become the battle. We've got almost 24 states that were suing or are suing the federal government. Last week, the Department of Justice announcing that they would not contend a stay order, an injunction that was issued by a court against the implementation of the policy. That's still working its way out through the court system. But the whole thing could be resolved, at least in large part, if the Trump administration rescinds those letters and allows the states to deal with them, as Texas is seeking to do with Senate Bill 6, which says, again, private entities can do what they want. If they want these confused bathroom policies, they can do it. But governments, the state government will not, and local governments cannot force private entities to change their shower policies and their locker room policies. And the state will not allow this on state property, state facilities. So that's the way the states, local jurisdictions can deal with it, but it requires the Trump administration to rescind those letters. So we're waiting to see if they'll, in fact, do that. It would be consistent with what the president said during the campaign, and it also, it just makes good sense to get the federal government out of the bathroom and shower policies of America. That is just indicative of the overreach of the Obama administration. It's all the stuff going on, and that's where they wanted to focus their attention. And it's really interesting how the left always says it's the right that's preoccupied with these social issues. Everyone, you can go back and look at it. Every single one, it's conservatives responding to what liberals have done, using the government, using either the courts or the government to impose a radical social policy. It was the way it was on marriage, and then they cry foul. Oh, you can't! You're spending all your time on social issues. I'd be quite happy not to spend any time on social policy. Focus on defense. Focus on economic issues. We could, if they were not pushing their radical anti-life, anti-family policies. So don't blame us if we respond. All right, folks, great to have you along today. Let me again encourage you, visit the website, tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. Sign up for my daily update. You're going to get all kinds of information as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. And as we depart, I leave you once again with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you have prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.